Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to your post-match Raw on Anfield Index Pro. Podcasting to you from my field here in beautiful rural Ireland, I'm Trev Denny, and joining me to give their immediate reactions to Liverpool 1, Manchester City 1 in the Premier League from Anfield are Dave Hendrick and Harry Sethi. It's an odd kind of a feeling that, Dave. I heard Gary Neville say that Manchester City were by far the better team in the first half, in an example of classic Neville nonsense. They weren't even existing in the second half, bar the fact they still managed to carve up a couple of really good chances. I thought they were as dominated as you'll ever see them be dominated. I thought we were profligate in a way that you'll rarely see again. You add all these things together and you're left frustrated that you only drew 1-1 with Manchester City, where I think, I'm not sure if you are amongst them, but an awful lot of people would have taken the draw before the game began.
Look, when I look at it objectively, I would have taken the draw because to be a point ahead of City going into the last 10 games, the title race starts now. 10 games is the title race. To be a point ahead of City is a position I would have taken. If we now match their results across the rest of this season, we will finish above them. And I think that means we'll win the league, because I don't expect Arsenal to be within 5 points of either of us.
Yeah.
But Gary Neville is talking utter shite. And the lads on Being Sport made a similar comment that City were the better team in the first half. I'm not sure how you could claim that they were better than us first half. The first half, to me, was very, very even. They had the early spell of play, but once we settled down and started to play, I thought we were the better team, and they scored against the run of play as well. Like, you look back at that first half, and there's the Dom header, there's the one Bradley flashes across goal that Darwin nearly gets on the end of, there's the one where Bradley gets into another brilliant position and should shoot and decides to try and find a teammate and can't do it. We had the more dangerous opportunities, I thought, in that first half. I didn't think they really troubled us at all in that first half. And they scored a well-worked free kick, or a corner kick, rather, very well-worked. But I never felt like they were on top, really. But I felt like we were playing within ourselves and easily able to match them.
Yeah.
And in that second half, we've absolutely dominated them. And we should feel a little bit aggrieved that we haven't won the game. We certainly had the chances to win the game. Luis Diaz missed a couple of massive chances. Cody Gakpo shat himself when he had a great chance. The final ball let us down once or twice. I think we've been denied a pretty stonewall penalty in stoppage time there. And the reason it's not been given is because it's in stoppage time. If that is in the 83rd minute or the 73rd minute, that penalty is given without question. It's a reckless high foot. It's dangerous play by Jeremy Doku. And I don't understand. Guy has named this call Howard Webb apology pending. And I think we will be getting an apology because it's absolutely a penalty.
Yeah.
Well, look, our lads, today we went into a game missing the best goalkeeper in the world, the best right back in the world, I think the second best centre-back in the world, Nebu Kanate, maybe third best after Kim Min-jae. We're missing Curtis Jones, even though I would say that midfield that started today is probably our strongest three. Even though individually, I would say Curtis is a better individual player than Endo. I think the balance that we had today is ideal. Diogo Jota, probably our best finisher, not there. And Salah only fit enough to come on after, 60, 65. You take those players out of any other team and put them up against that City team, not only do they not come away with a draw, they get battered.
Yeah.
And we've gone there today. We've completely outplayed them. So massive credit to this group of lads, especially Jarrell Kwanzaa, who I don't know if you guys have heard, he was seen limping coming off the pitch. And obviously that was panic stations. He was asked if he was injured and he looked confused. But it turned out he still had Erling Haaland in his pocket, so that's now been resolved.
I'm glad you managed to fit one like that in there at the end. And to be honest, any day where you see that ridiculous-looking clown being pocketed is a good day. And Harry, I suppose I do want to be positive, and it's kind of my natural bent anyway, but it's hard not to be a little bit angry coming off the back of that. That more than disappointed. Disappointment doesn't really enter into it. It's hard not to be angry with a couple of pretty egregious refereeing decisions, with the fact that, you know, we have actually completely monstered them over the course of 90. The second half, they were just owned in a way that I don't think I've seen them be before. A little bit of the anger is, you know, towards some of our own lads as well, not just taking the opportunities when they arrive, because this is massive. It's fucking massive, Harry. And I think had we gone ahead today, it would have felt, you know what, man, I know it's stupid. I know there's 10 games left and Dave has been preaching that the title race is only starting now. And I think he's right. But it would have felt almost as if it was nearly done in a weird way. Psychologically, it would have been huge. I don't think we're too badly damaged by it being a draw. But the advantage that's missed is where the annoyance comes in for me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a mixture of sort of pride from, like, because of the performance and the number of players out, like Dave was mentioning. I don't think many other sides in the league are able to put in a performance like that again against what's, you know, objectively one of the best sides, if not the best or strongest side in Europe in terms of the squad that they've got. I think it's, you're not going to find many teams that are able to do that or coaches that are able to get that out of a group of players. So really proud in that sense, especially after I thought it was a fairly... not comfortable, but a fairly assured start from City, where you thought, okay, maybe they are really on it, and you know, nice, neat passing, not seeming to get overawed. But of course, once the cauldron did really start sort of bubbling up, like, we saw what we've seen before from City, and that they were wobbling, they were on the ropes, and it's just disappointment that we weren't able to land, I suppose, the knockout blow during that period, because. Yeah, it's what we've been so good at over the years. And so I think, like you were talking about, Trev, there's a little bit of frustration mixed in there around sort of like the fact that we are in the midst of overhauling this team still and rebuilding what was a prolific and pretty flawless at times front three. And it's impossible not to think about, you know, what the likes of Sadio or other players in some of the positions that we found ourselves in today would have done. So that's a slight sort of source of frustration for me. But I think that before we get onto all the positive stuff, and I think there really is a lot of positive stuff in terms of some of the performances. And again, I think the belief that we can take from this, having put in such a performance with that many players out. But I really, you know, I don't come onto these pods with a tinfoil hat on about PGMO and whining about referees. I also was under the impression from a lot of Arsenal fans that, you know, that the referees and everybody had got together to ensure Liverpool won the league this season. So I'm very, very surprised to see that what, in my opinion, is a clear foul and a clear dangerous play at the end of the game ends in a no decision, which in my view is the easiest thing they could have done, is not make any decision in that scenario. And I just, I find that completely baffling. That's not the reason why we don't win the game, for example, but it's hard to look at that when you've gone through the other situations we've done this season where players have been sent off for certain challenges. I'm thinking of Jones against Tottenham, really, where he makes contact with the ball, slides over it, hits the player's leg, and we're told that it doesn't matter that he touched the ball first because of the dangerous play that resulted afterwards. So the fact that nothing was done and no decision was made, I'm inclined to believe, sort of agree with Dave there, that just like the first 5 minutes of a game where officials don't like to make a decision, even if it is the rules, because it spoils the game, but in this situation, they sort of bottled that as well. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm sure as the pod goes on, Trev, there'll be more pride coming in because there really were a lot of terrific performances there. And I thought the crowd, Anfield, played their part as well, exactly as you were hoping for. So, yeah, it's one of these games, Liverpool versus City. And for whatever other teams might say across the league, I think this is not probably the most intense version we've seen, but it's just a different level whenever they come together. So, another epic to be involved in.
Yeah, for sure. And, there's a thing there that I've heard you say a few times, Dave, about how, and I agree because I've made the point independently and whilst on pods with you as well, or agreed with what, when you were saying it, that the some of the most annoying things about the last few years is the fact that you can point all you like to the cheating and all the rest of it. You can point all you like to the financial doping, all the rest of it. Yeah. But the fact is that there were titles left on the table that we could and should have won if we had done things differently. And I really understand the point of view which says, but we were magnificent, and were it not for, then X. And I completely agree. You cannot argue with that equation. It's perfectly correct. But there's a part of me that always thinks, yeah, but there were things there that could still have been won anyway. However, it gets to a point, doesn't it, where, you know, much and all as I admire that attitude towards things, and I 100% find myself mouthing it all the time, Not to very favourable response, because most people want to talk to you about how wonderful we are and how they're just cheating bastards, etc., and break it down to simple things like that. But when you have a day like today, where you have a couple of egregious refereeing errors, and you have a couple of times where we have the opportunities right in front of us to take that advantage and stomp on them, and just actually we could have humiliated them there today. There was an opportunity to win by a couple of goals. Easy. That's sort of where I'm talking there about my irritation creeps in. The stuff I was mentioning to Harry there, that we can't always let ourselves off the hook about how they're fucking wonderful and they're patently an excellent collection of footballers. It's we all know it's how that's been put together is the question. It's no consolation, I think, is what I'm saying to you, that, you know, oh, they cheat, or oh, they are brilliant, or oh, they're fantastic, and how can you compete with them? Sometimes you just go, yeah, we could have fucking beaten them today. We should have beaten them today. Do you know what I mean?
100%. And, like, look, when you get 97 points, which is, you know, historically great, people do want to lean into the fact that we've had this historically great campaign, and we would have won the league if not for those cheating bastards. But then you go back and you look at the actual results. And in 18-19, you know, we draw seven games. We lose only one away to City, that's fine. We draw away to Chelsea, we draw home to City, that's fine. We draw away to Arsenal, that's fine. January 30th, we draw at home to a really poor Leicester City team. A really, really poor Leicester City team, having gone one up. Been 1-1 at half time. 5 days later, we go to West Ham and we draw with a poor West Ham team, 1-1. Those two games cost us that league title. Like, forget everything else. Win one of those two games and we win the league. 21-22, it's exactly the same story. We draw 8 games. We only lose 2. We lose away to West Ham, which is a bad result. A really bad result because they're poor. I know they finished like 6th or whatever that season, but they're not close to our level. But a draw at home with Brighton, having been 2-0 up, really poor result. The 3-3 with a newly promoted Brentford, poor result. But what really killed us that season was the 1-0 defeat away to Leicester City when they're missing 2/3 of their team and we're in dreadful form. Those results ultimately cost us the title that year. Not City being cheats. If we'd just done what we should have done and won one of those 4 games, the Brentford game, the Brighton game, the West Ham game, or the Leicester game, all we needed to do was win one of them or, you know, take points in the 2 that we lost to bad teams, and we would have won the league. This season, again, I feel like we've drawn too many games on 7, but the difference is that this year, City have drawn 6 games. In 18-19, City only drew 2. So this season feels a little bit different to me. And yeah, as I look at it, the only results I can really pick at for us this season and say, that's disappointing. United home, where we should have hammered them, and Luton away, where we should have beaten them because they're shit. But then I can look at the Spurs game, where we've been robbed by PGMOL. We should have got a point that day. The Arsenal home game, where Martin Odegaard is allowed to play basketball, we're robbed by PGMOL. And then Trent misses the sitter. But the PGMOL issue is the bigger one here. That's 3 points between those 2 games. And now today, Alexis McAllister is clearly fouled. It should have been a penalty. You'd back him to step up and score, or Salah to step up and score. And that's 5 points that we've now been robbed. So this season feels a little bit different to me. But I would still say we should have beaten United at home and we should have beaten Luton away. Yeah, there are still points we've left on the table that we shouldn't have.
Agree. And for a little bit of contrast, so people understand why we're talking about this, the levels have been ratcheted so high by the performances of Manchester City and Liverpool, matching them almost and sometimes surpassing them. When we won the league and cup double in Kenny's first season, the Roy of the Rovers season where he was player manager, we won the league and cup double, which was a glorious, glorious thing that nobody did that often. I think it was won a couple of times beforehand. It was such a cool achievement, such an amazing achievement. That year in the league, we had struggled in the early part of it. And of 42 games, we won 26. We drew 10 times and lost 6 times, and we won the league by a couple of points on 88 points because we went on an unbelievable tear.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
In the second half of the season, but coming up to Christmas, we had been pretty rubbish and there was an awful lot of points left behind. And it just shows you how things have changed. You can't. We're now looking at these two results, which you mentioned there, where we have been absolutely robbed of them by stupid fucking decisions. Again, the feeling that the theme continues today, and it's that bad now. You can only afford to lose 2 or 3 times, and then it comes down to which team draws the most games. Well, I'm sorry, you're going to be second. It just, the standards are so high. And Harry, let's push on into our analysis of this game. And I'll start with you in terms of the Liverpool lineup very briefly, because I think most of us were a little bit saddened not to see Ibu Konate there. Conor Bradley, I'm not sure, was predicted by everybody. But when you see Bradley and Kwanzaa, Van Dijk and Gomez, isn't it really strange, Harry, that as a Liverpool fan, you think, oh, yeah, that's a good unit. That'll be all right. Like, Let's just think about that for a second. Bradley has played like a handful of times. Kwanzaa has played a few more, but both of them only this season. And you're quite calm about it, and they are a solid unit. Endo, Szoboszlai and McAllister, as Dave said earlier on, should have the right mixture. But Dom is very, very much on the trail back and very much out of rhythm. Mac and Endo are just outrageously good and in rhythm at the moment. So you're happy enough with that unit. And then we get to see Luis Diaz and Darwin and Harvey Elliott, and you go, yeah, that'll do for me. Our bench had, of course, Mo Salah on it, Cody Gakpo on it. We had Andy Robbo on there as well as Tsimikas. And then it starts to fall off a little bit in terms of going to the kids level, which we've seen come on and do very well. McConnell and Clark were there. Kumas was there and Nalo was there as well. And I think when you read out those last four names, I know you're allowed a big bench these days, but it does kind of remind you what we've been up against and how thin it's been at times. So again, maybe this is one where we just go, well, look, in the context, this is actually a very solid result. What did you make of how we went? Did you feel that it was going to be any different than that? Because to me, there's a couple of shouts that could be made, but I think he made all the right ones, because I think Robertson, Gomez over Robertson is the right shout. And I think Conor Bradley is the right shout. I'm not sure. You might agree. What did you think?
No, I do agree. I agree on that. I think based on what you've seen from Foden over the past few weeks and sort of him being so pivotal to the way in which City play and build up and such a threat, he's been in really great form. You did want a bit more of a defensively solid member of the team on that side in terms of the left back. And yeah, what we've seen from Joe Gomez this season, I think by the end of the season, I think we'll say is truly remarkable in the way in which he has come in this season. And I'm touching sort of every piece of wood that's near me at the moment around his the consistency of fitness from him. But I think in terms of the way in which he has done numerous roles for this team when needed, and not just fulfilled those roles, but actually performed to a really high level in the vast majority of them. Yes, maybe he's not everybody's cup of tea when it comes to being a six. I think it's probably new. It's obviously new for him as well. But you know, left back, right back, centre back, whatever he's asked to do, changing in game plenty of times as well. And you can always rely on him for that sort of level of performance. So that made sense to me. Conor Bradley, everything about him has shown he's a cool customer since he's come into the team. So as you said, Trev, not worried, not phased at all, to be honest. Slightly concerned that if he was going to be up against Doku, that it doesn't matter who you are, that turn of pace is difficult for anybody 1v1, and thought that might have limited him a little bit more. But that obviously didn't transpire until much later on when Doku came on and Bradley was gone by then. So Kwanzaa, I think, as you said, Konate, Dave mentioned midweek that you pretty much can't design centre-backs better to deal with the likes of Erling Haaland than Ibu and Virgil. So always a shame not to see him in the team, because he is a wonderful centre-back. But I think this is another step for Kwanzaa in just really proving himself as a wonderful young talent, so composed. It is his performance, I'm sure we'll come on to it, but again, not something that worried you. Mac and Endo, I think that they picked themselves in recent form. Szoboszlai, again, I think given the options we had, made sense. We were just hoping he could maybe rediscover some of that early season fluency, but perhaps it is a little bit much to expect that from him. And then, Gakpo, I don't think is impressed of late. So to see the likes of Elliott chosen for that left-side role and Salah given the option off the bench, it's a hell of a super sub to have in our back pocket and ensures that the likes of Mido won't lose his mind on Twitter about the fact that Salah's starting against City. isn't traveling to Egypt, so I'm sure he'll still have plenty to say, because that's who he is. But we've seen Elliott put in really disciplined, intense performances over the past few weeks, and also against City at Anfield previously, so I wasn't upset to see him. So I think as you said, there's a couple shouts there, maybe Salah coming in and the decisions on the left back, but I think we made the right ones. I think Klopp made the right ones as well.
Now, I heard your chat on Rival Recon about City, and I want you to come in at the end here as well if there's anything you want to say about them after Dave's had a word about City today. And look, let's talk about these maybe in the abstract. Like, they can select any number of wonderful footballers. Today they went with Ederson, they went with Walker, Stones, Akanji, Aki, Rodri, De Bruyne, Silva, Foden, Haaland and Alvarez. Like, outrageously good footballers in that team, and they had Ortega to take off the bench, who I was really hoping would be rattled. Alas, he wasn't. They have Diaz on there and Kovacic on there and Doku on there and Guardiola on there. I mean, holy shit. And Nunes, Bob Lewis and Gomez made up the numbers for them. It goes back to what I was saying a bit earlier on. It's hard for them to pick a bad team, you know, and so it's always going to be a massive challenge. Did you expect them to go the way they did today? And we won't get into necessarily how they performed on the day, because that's going to get into our match analysis chit chat. But anything you want to say about how they are as a unit, what you're feeling after seeing them today in terms of our ability to perhaps have some chance of overhauling them and win this fucking thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly a very, very good team with lots and lots of really good players. The surprise for me was that Ruben Diaz didn't start.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, their fans like to try and put him in conversations with Van Dijk. I certainly don't remember our manager leaving Van Dijk out of a title, potential title decider away to the biggest rivals, but you know, such is life. So yeah, I was a little bit surprised he didn't start, but the rest of it was, I mean, he had a couple of decisions to make. He could have played Kovacic in the middle and Bernardo off the left. He obviously went to that in game. He started Julian Alvarez off the left and Conor Bradley basically put him in his pocket for an hour. So there was that. Look, we knew coming in, KDB's not been his usual self since coming back from his injury, which is understandable. He had two very severe hamstring injuries, literally off the back of each other. But Phil Foden was in incredible form coming into this game. And obviously Erling Haaland is a freak of nature up front. The only thing is, Haaland never really worries me when we have Virgil. Because I just think, you know, Virgil has dealt with Haaland many times and he dealt with him very comfortably today as well. The concern was going to be if Haaland could isolate Kwanzaa. But I heard the commentator say today that Phil Foden has a new nickname. They call him the Sniper. And I just thought to myself, that is a nickname that little prick has given himself, because he's been doing that shit celebration. And every time he goes to do it, one of his teammates tries to stop him doing it, as if to say, lad, will you stop embarrassing yourself and the rest of us here?
Oh, you've like, called that. You've called that.
I do just want to say something on that, by the way. I won't distract us for too long on that, Dave, but I know that you'd share this sentiment. There's been some nice stuff about Foden, like teaching some, you know, some young kids that celebration this week, you know, and it's fine. He's a sniper. He's a wonderful young player. I'm sorry. Like, Sterling did that for years. And some of the pretty openly, I mean,
call it what it is. It was racial.
That he got for doing the gun celebration. And Foden's getting op-eds about teaching the kids the gun celebration in the Daily Mail. It's remarkable.
Do you remember when we played Newcastle at home last season and Fabio Carvalho scored the winner? And there's a clip of him and Harvey. I think it's that game. That was the game he scored as Premier League. Did he score another Premier League goal? Either way, he scored a Premier League goal for us last season. And him and Harvey ran over and they did the thing where they put their kind of left arm across their face, almost like a balaclava, and cocked the other hand like a pistol. And they got slated for it. Absolutely slated for it. And yet Phil Foden is teaching children to mimic firing a rifle at a time where we have a war going on in Ukraine. We have a genocide going on in Gaza. We have reports nearly daily of snipers taking out civilians in Gaza, and Phil Foden is being held up like some sort of national treasure. This is mind-blowing to me. Absolutely mind-blowing to me. And while I'm on the topic of Phil Foden, is he the pikiest young fella to ever make it as a professional footballer?
Other than Anthony Stokes,
who's like an actual traveller and a proud member of the traveller community and doesn't do anything to step, never did like that kind of stuff to step out of line. But Phil Foden, like if he wasn't playing professional football, he would definitely be selling copious amounts of drugs on street corners in Manchester.
It's a remarkable decision he's made with how he presents himself to the world. I'll give you that for sure. And if we're talking about snipers, let's just be perfectly honest about this. Jurgen Klopp has taken a headshot of Mike Dean in his post-match chat there, where he said, Mike Dean works for Sky. Good appointment, by the way.
Good process, lads. Good process.
And look, we'll get into it. We should mention the fact that the best referee in the Premier League, TM, Mr. Michael Oliver, took charge today. And the wonderful Stuart Atwell was on VAR. And between the two of them, they managed yet another PGMOL clown show for the ages with a couple of calls today. So hats off to them for that. I don't feel like giving them any more time than that. They're just incessantly awful and just continuously poor at what they do. It's hard not to break out what Harry referred to as your tinfoil hat at times, but it's sometimes you see them being equally awful to everybody. It's just particularly funny to me that there are stories out there, as you said, Harry, from the Arsenal fans, particularly about how everyone's coming together to win Liverpool the title. I mean, seriously, fucking watch a game. It's remarkable. Let's you and I begin the first half, Harry, and talk about what went on, because if we are being perfectly honest, City started very much the better team in the first 7-8 minutes. Foden was nearly in the first minute. On goal. On 2 minutes, Silva had a shot that was saved by Quivin after a decent move by them. De Bruyne on 7 minutes was in the end of a counter. It was a left foot dinked cross type thing that went across the face of goal. And then on 8 minutes, De Bruyne very much to the fore again, this time a stinging left footed shot parried by Quivin. And you'd have to say that they had sort of started very much with their tails up and looked like we were going to struggle and they were going to dominate in a way that we weren't comfortable with at all. But it's then that starts to turn around and gives the lie completely to Gary Neville and his stupid assessment, because on 12 minutes Conor Bradley drove at the byline. He drove over a brilliant cross and Darwin stretching to get there, can't quite reach it, and he clatters into the post, sliding for it. It looks to me like as he's sliding, it catches him sort of under the arm and into the chest. And I think he may well have been labouring after that a little bit. It was a bad old bang that he took. A great ball by Darwin Núñez on 14 minutes, nearly picked out Luis Diaz. On 15, Luis Diaz crosses the ball in, but it's a little bit behind Darwin Núñez, who's stretching his head back to try and make contact with it. He does, but he can't direct the header on target because the cross is so far behind him. At that point, Anfield had started to lift a bit. Kloppo had been asking them. He was asking them again, but that cross and the Darwin header just sort of lifted things a bit. Walker was late for about the second time after about 15 or 16 minutes, and he got away with murder in the game, as did several of their others. The ball was in the net on 18 from a great move. Darwin is offside, but he plays the ball into Luis Diaz, who does finish, the only time he does finish in the game. And at this point, you know, the place is rocking. Mac has a block shot pretty soon after that. And it is a good response by us. But let's take it up as far as the goal, because this is where people are going to be thinking the halfway point of the half is. We did have an opportunity for them where we needed a great clearing header by Van Dijk from a Silva cross. That led to a corner. Now, you know, we're generally very good at dealing with these things. But the corner comes in and Stone scores. It's a near post driven corner from De Bruyne. And Stones just sort of finds himself a yard of space at the near post and directs the ball in. It's a really clever move. It looks great. But there is an incident which happens in the lead up to it where McAllister is being blocked in the same way that we saw a player being blocked very recently, which led to a goal being ruled out for Virgil van Dijk. I don't know if there was even any VAR intervention. I don't think there was. If there was, we didn't hear about it. But anyway, we're one down. Talk to me about that opening. That was 23 minutes. That opening 23 minutes, the balance of it, and how there was a narrative being spun by Neville that was only rescued by the fact that they managed to get that goal.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Yeah, no, so I thought I was quite impressed by City's start just in terms of the composure on the ball. Yes, we know they're a great side when it comes to sort of keeping possession, lots of technically really skilled footballers, like wonderful midfielders who play as wingers, whatever. Lots of players there who are great at caring for the ball. But we've seen in the past, you know, some of the opening 15, 20 minutes at Anfield can often be sometimes some of the most intense moments in the game. And yeah, they've floundered in those moments. What actually happens today is obviously that those moments of intensity came later, you know, and in the second half, and they did flounder. But in the early exchanges, I thought it was impressive to see them passing it around quite nicely and neatly, not necessarily being overly threatening with what they were doing, but you know, to see a side come in a big fixture like this and put their front foot forward like that, I thought it was. It's impressive. Just a reminder, I suppose, as Dave was talking about there, that yeah, this is a wonderfully talented group of players, and it's a tough task to beat them. So the sort of reset expectations about blowing them away from the off or something like that. I thought there's a couple of players who over the years have just become incredibly infuriating to play against, because I'd say one of them. Maybe not most technically proficient members of that squad is one Kyle Walker, but he's just an Olympic level sprinter who's able to clear things up. And I thought, to your point there, Trevor, he is late on a couple of occasions. I thought they were perhaps a little bit lucky to get away with a couple of those early challenges. But I thought we were starting to respond. You mentioned the goal that's obviously ruled offside. That Darwin goes a little bit early. It was a frustrating day, I think, for Darwin in terms of those offsides. We do know he's so quick, and we see that later on in terms of sort of how effective that can be, how useful it can be. But still, that's an aspect of his game that I think he's going to refine and get finely tuned over the years, especially for these bigger games. I think he broke some record today or something like that for the number of offsides from a Liverpool player in one game. But yeah, again, he had a telling contribution when it was needed. And the goal itself from City, just as we were starting to assert ourselves a little bit and show that we could land a punch, force them back, always a bit galling to concede from a set piece. Usually we are very good at dealing with them. I think it's just one of those where somebody in the City team has done some good work when it comes to scouting and some of the real small details of knowing where certain players tend to hover and where there's gaps and where there's opportunities. I also, like you, Trev, thought, well, isn't that what Endo was adjudged to have done in the Carabao Cup final? Having said that, I have to say, very quickly, I was corrected by a number of Arsenal fans. I appreciate them tuning in for the game. But I think, actually, by the end of that Carabao Cup final, I was so confused as to sort of why that goal was ruled out and what Endo exactly was a judge to have done, whether it was offside or whatever. Consistency is something we're still grasping for. It's a good goal. It's, you know, it's well worked, but wasn't a goal that was indicative of them, you know, having their foot on our necks or anything like that. So yeah, you'd hope to be, we would dust ourselves off and come back. And yeah, I think that's what we saw.
We very much did. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that slant on things. And they feel free to dive back into the first section if you want. But it's interesting to note how the second part of that first half pans out, because we respond well. There's a Dominic Szoboszlai header narrowly wide after a great Harvey Elliott dinked cross, a lovely move. Good bit of pressure from us, a good response after a couple of minutes to going one down. And on 33, again, great pressure. Bradley ends up with a shot blocked. 36, De Bruyne has one deflected wide that leads to a corner. They get nothing from it, but we're back at it again. Harvey has a shot this time. And in the wake of Harvey's shot, Van Dijk versus Haaland was absolutely brilliant to watch. We've seen these moments before. I think probably the best one ever is Virgil against Spurs, but this one was pretty cool. It would have been a little bit better if Haaland hadn't managed to get quite such a half-decent contact on his shot, but Virgil had done enough that Quivin was able to take the shot on 39 minutes with comparative ease. 41, Diaz cuts in, he fires one wide of the left post, and he'd gotten himself into around about the penalty spot area and shoots back across the face of goal and puts it wide. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, please, one of these. The worst is obviously yet to come. Alvarez then hit one pretty well over the top in 43 minutes. At this point, Gary Neville chimes in with this. City has been, no doubt, City have been the better team this half. And it's just such blatant sky narrative driving bollocks that I feel that I don't care. Sorry if you're listening to this and you find it irritating that I'm pointing out what lads in Sky are saying, because you didn't hear it or you don't care. You should care, because they are actually the narrative managers. These guys, what they say, people are stupid enough to believe, people are stupid enough to repeat in their media match reports. It becomes the accepted reality. And if you can't understand that that's not okay, then I don't know what to say to you, but I'm going to keep pointing it out anyway. 2 minutes were added, Dave, and Walker put a cross over in 45 minutes. And really, there was a great opportunity for them there. We were wide open. We go right up the far end. Bradley puts in, nearly gets in at the right hand post on 46 minutes. He has to shoot. He crosses, he has to shoot. And on 47, Rodri puts a free kick, or gets a free kick kind of central, about 40 yards out. It's a yellow card, sorry, for Rodri. We get a free kick against them about 40 yards out in the central area. And it looks like it's probably a nothing kind of opportunity, or it's one you should dink in because it's too far to shoot. But Dom Szoboszlai does not believe that it's too far to shoot. He makes the most glorious contact, hits it low and hard, and it gets right down into the corner. Now, it could do with being a bit harder because the keeper gets there. But I was really surprised by the shot, and I enjoyed the fact that he went for it. I really enjoyed the execution, the skill level involved in the execution of it. So the second half, I thought, of the first half, we absolutely dominated for the most part. And overall, I would have thought Neville's theory on who was by far the better team was just so patently wrong that it is worth mentioning.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say they were the better team for the first 15 minutes.
Yes, but 100%.
I thought when they scored, like, we just had a couple of really good chances when they scored. So we'd been on top for 5 to 7 minutes before that. And then after they scored, it's largely all us, and they're trying to hit us on the counterattack. I don't understand the narrative at all that they were better than us first half. Like, first half was very, very balanced. It was very, very balanced. Now, look, you could say, well, Liverpool didn't test the goalkeeper, and that's true, but that's not a marker on who the better team has been. That's just a marker on who's taken their chances better. And we had fluffed our lines a couple of times, but we'd absolutely had those lines to fluff. So, I mean, look, Gary Neville is a very weird little man who's probably twisted and turned in all directions because, you know, his lord and master, Sir Alex Ferguson, is probably conflicted over who he would have wanted to win today, considering he spent 26 years trying to knock Liverpool off their perch and failed. And Manchester City, when they started to get some money, he said that, what was it? He said something about over his dead body or something, that City would become the dominant team in Manchester. And the first time they won the league, they were passing around inflatable tombstones with R.I.P. Fergie on them. And Carlos Tevez was seen holding a cutout tombstone with R.I.P. Fergie. So obviously the poor drunken Scot was very upset about these things. So, you know, Gary goes on what Sir Alex Ferguson thinks he should think, because Gary's not capable of independent thought. And he's just looked like a simpleton at the scoreline and at the shots on target and thought, oh, well, City must be playing better. But they weren't. Like, they simply weren't playing better than us in that first half. We had easily matched them. And you felt like this was about all they had to give. But we had a lot more to give. And we also had a fella on the bench that we know terrifies them.
Yeah.
And then we saw what happened in the second half. We kicked it up a notch, and they weren't really able to cope with us.
Sorry, I thought I'd lost you there, Dave. What makes me really frustrated is the fact that when you think about the amount of opportunities, you count them up and you look at the overall stats today for the match, any narrative that places City in any way ahead or doesn't acknowledge the fact that they were very, very well dominated for the majority of the football match is a false narrative. 19 shots from us to their 10, 6 on target for both teams. We actually had 6% more of the possession than them, which, considering Manchester City, is quite interesting. The passes were quite even. We had a few more, 5-6-4 to 5-10. Our accuracy was a little bit better than theirs. And it's only when you get into the other things, and I, like you, Dave, I think I've gotten a little bit, I'm finding increasingly, I did try to embrace it. I did. I try to embrace XG, but increasingly I'm finding the metric a bit annoying because of how it's measured and the inconsistencies therein. So I'm not even going to talk about that. I'll leave some of you guys to bring it up if you want. But let's push on, Harry, you and I, and talk about the start of this second half, because this is where things start to look up for us. There is a yellow on 46 minutes for Ederson, who cleans Darwin out of it as he slides into him and bashes into him and cleans him out of it. It's a yellow card, and Ederson goes down and he's hurt. Now, I'm looking at, and I just want to bring you straight in here, it's the penalty is given, which is a shock for all concerned. Ederson's lying down there. He takes about 3 minutes out of it being injured. I thought it was entirely cynical, but he did have to go off. So he obviously did hurt himself. But I just want to take a second, Harry, and I'm going to get your take and Dave's quickly on this. Tell me if I'm talking absolute shite here. But is that not a red card? Discuss.
Yeah, again, I think it's another situation where you're left like trying to check the rule book and seeing exactly where it is at the moment. It's I'm trying to remember when I've seen a keeper recently red carded for making a challenge like that. I've seen outfield players absolutely red carded for making it a challenge like that that clearly denies a goal scoring opportunity as the last player. I don't know currently where the goalkeeping sort of rule book is on keepers making a foul like that, because it's cynical. It's clearly stopping the player from a goal scoring opportunity. If they award a penalty, are they then allowed to do the red card? I'm just trying to think about sort of recent examples where I've seen that, and I can't think of one that comes to mind. Dave, do you know?
I'm assuming it just falls under the double jeopardy rule that he was trying to play the ball. Like, he was in the process of kicking the ball. I assume that's what it comes in. Like, if you look at the red card that John McGinn got in the Villa Spurs game today, Yeah. Where Adoyeji runs past him and he just runs over. And it's a similar type thing. He goes to kick the ball. Adoyeji knocks a pass and he just boots him and he goes straight through him. But I assume because we've gotten a penalty, like if it had happened outside the box, it's definitely a red card. I assume because it's in the box, it's a penalty and a yellow rather than a red. And unfortunately, he does hurt himself to the point where he can't carry on. Because I do think if he had to stay on, because he was clearly hobbled, like, it looked like Darwin, in the process of the coming together, like Darwin's left knee caught him kind of in the right thigh. And I wonder if it just gave him a dead leg. But I assume double jeopardy. That's the only thing that really makes sense there.
Yeah, that's where I landed with it too. And I just wanted to tease it out with both of you. I have to say, for me, that's an absolute nonsense of a law. I don't understand why you just don't, like, never mind double jeopardy, just double down. If you have done the same offence, as Harry says, as an outfield player, and you've cleaned someone out in the box deliberately, which is exactly what happened, then it should be a red card. I for the life of me, I can't understand it. But anyway, Harry, we'll push on, but let's briefly talk about the lovely, lovely calmness of Mr. McAllister, as he had to wait, like I said, 3 minutes. No doubt all their shite hawks were doing everything they could to upset him. We saw some great Virgil running interference, quite impressively, hanging around, you know, making sure nobody's getting at Mac, who kind of withdrew, took himself out of the immediate zone. But it doesn't make any difference because his head is still having to deal with this delay. He drives the ball to the keeper's right, and Ederson, you know, a very fine goalkeeper, as we know, goes the right way, but he can't get near it because it's hit with such precision and power. A moment again, we'll just pause here to let you talk about that, because these are big, big moments of the season. And at this point, much of those, we may be bitching about the fact that we should have three, this point may be massive.
Absolutely. And I think actually it's probably a good point just to talk about Mac's performance in general, because I think coming into the game, he was sort of somebody that you could sort of single out as being really important for us. If he was going to perform well, that was going to be needed for us to have a good game against City today. And yeah, he's been, of course, more and more influential as the weeks have gone by, showing his flexibility and playing in a role that he wasn't really comfortable in earlier in the season. And doing the good soldier thing of saying, oh, I love doing this, I'll do anything for the lads. Whenever he's interviewed about it, quite clearly wants to play in this role or a little bit further forward when he gets the opportunity, because he is so much more influential. I thought today the composure on the ball, his touch was very, very often perfect. I don't know exactly what his passing stats were at the end of the game, but I thought he was largely immaculate and really considered. And there's elements of Thiago's game that he now provides us with as well, which is great considering we've been denied, football's been denied Thiago Alcantara for such a long time as well. And the penalty, as you say, Trevor, stepping up in high pressure situations, it's one thing taking a penalty in a Europa League game against Sparta Prague. It's another thing stepping up in a game like this, the stakes that are on on that penalty kick. And as you said, the time he had to wait before he took it, I thought, to take a penalty where the first time the ball hits the net, it's the side netting. I think that generally bodes well for any penalty taker, and I just think he's a complete gem. And for us to have got him for the price that we did is just I think it's one of the signings, if not the signing of the season. I think he's been tremendous.
Can I ask you both something here? Because as I'm listening to Harry and enjoying what he's saying, I made the mistake of opening the Premier League table, and it's upsetting me tremendously to look at those fuckers sitting ahead of us on goal difference. And I have a question for both of you, and you guys are going to know this a lot quicker than I will, because it's not the type of thing I can keep in my head. When was it that we were last not top of this league? When did we go top? Because we've stayed there, I think. Does anyone remember when that was, or do either of you remember? Anyone?
I'll tell you now in 1 second. I know that we've been top for quite a while because I've been introduced into Daily Red, but your daily reminder that the Reds are top of the league.
Well, you can say joint top today, but tomorrow.
Yeah, we went top after match week 19, which is when we beat Burnley on St. Stephen's Day. We had been top after beating Crystal Palace. We dropped to second after the two draws against United and Arsenal. And we've been top since beating Burnley 2-0 away.
Okay, so from the 26th of December, we have been top. It's do you know what I love about this? I love that we haven't relinquished any. We're not second on points. It is a goal difference thing, and I think that it makes it kind of manageable. I can cope with it. We're still kind of joint top. But it was just one of those things that occurred to me as I was looking at it. Sorry, I just wanted to get that little point in there.
Harry, I should say, Trev, that the likes of Jorginho is already celebrating it on Twitter, which I think says a lot about,
Sorry, elaborate. How do you mean?
Literally, you can look at the timestamp of the tweet almost on the final whistle. There's like a celebratory fist pump photo from Jorginho saying, I forget what he said, but something along the lines of just celebrating the result, right? And I think it's, to quote John Henry, right? It gives you a bit of an idea of what they're smoking over there in terms of, no one should be popping the champagne corks just yet, as Jürgen said.
Well, it would be delightful. It will be the most delightful ever bottling if they manage to bottle it again, because we will enjoy it like no other people have. And Harry Seti, you and I, sir, will do at least one podcast on our own where we just take the piss out of Arsenal people relentlessly. That is my promise to you, my pledge to you, sir. Let's have a look at the next chunk of the game, because after we go 1-1, Harry, there is a lovely opportunity on 53 minutes, some 4 minutes after the goal, where Kwanzaa plays the ball over the top to Darwin. And it's a lovely little sort of opening for us. And it's a reminder that we have lots of ways to break through teams. On 55, they do have to bring on Ortega for Ederson, who is actually crocked. And on 57, Quivian makes a big, big save from Foden, a big one. But we don't sit back and let them get on top of us. We're not overly rocked, because a minute later, Luis Diaz is in, but his touch is awful. After a great carry and a glorious 1-2, the return pass on the 1-2 from Darwin on the swivel is just a thing of beauty. He plays in Diaz. He's in on goal. It's a tremendous opportunity to go ahead. It should be buried. It's not. On 58, Silva gets a yellow. He should have one already, to be honest with you. He's chipping away there as he is the little... I really don't like that lad. He's a great footballer, but he's one of my least favourite footballers. On 59, Dominic Szoboszlai drives in on goal. I think we mentioned this earlier. I can't remember if it was before the mics went live. It's a wild shot. He should do much, much better with it. It feels like back-to-back opportunities went in literally a minute of each other where we could have hit the front and gone ahead. And then it's on the 60-minute mark, we bring on Mo and Robbo for Bradley and Dom. And that's where we're going to pause, you and I, because I want you to talk about that little period after the goal where they do have an opportunity. We rely on a good save by Quivian for Foden, but apart from that, it is all us. And then we change it up, and I'm interested to hear what you make of those changes as well.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have 3 podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on eplindex.com. The podcasts are my own Two-Footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, no, I thought we reasserted ourselves, really. I think this was the stage of the game where I thought, again, the atmosphere was really ratcheting up, and we were seeing something that we'd seen in the past around sort of City struggling to deal with the intensity of that environment. I think the Guardiola has described it as a tsunami that sort of came their way for about 20 minutes. And yeah, we've seen, I mean, you can be the most technically proficient footballers on the planet and you can find yourself submerged in it during those moments. And yeah, I thought they really did struggle. I mean, on Bernardo's own, just a small message again, if you are ever wondering a little bit about Bernardo Silva and what sort of lad he is, just take a small glance at some of the folks he follows on his Twitter profile, and quite a good indication of who he is. So he's a wonderful footballer, right? I thought in these moments, you mentioned the Diaz chances. I was at the Luton game a few weeks ago and was thinking back, well, you know, he needed 4, 5, 6 chances that night to finally put one away, and was just hoping that he'd get 5 or 6 tonight, because we know that the finishing and ruthless finishing is just not one of his strengths. It's, you know, we can talk about the intensity, the tenacity of his game. And I think that run around this period, if it wasn't a little bit afterwards, where he takes on both Kyle Walker and Rodri and emerges with the ball somehow and seems to actually muscle off Rodri in the end, it gives you so much of an indication as to what kind of character, what kind of fighter he is. But yeah, it's not putting players down. I mean, it's a very high bar to judge them against, but you can't help but think about Sadio Mane in that situation. You can't help but think about, you know, the previous forwards that we've had, and the fact that in these games against City, you don't get 3, 4, 5 chances. You need to take the 1 or 2 that you're given, and so it was galling to see that that effort go so far around the post. But I thought again in this period, you could see they were struggling to play their game. I'm trying to remember if this was the period where Kevin De Bruyne went off. Trevor, actually may have been a little bit before this, but I think that inquisition on the bench between him and Guardiola and some of the coaches, where he disagreed with that substitution and the way in which he could have influenced the game. I think just when a player like that, who's been as talismanic, yes, he's still coming back in terms of fitness, when a player like that is frustrated, is ruffled, I think it shows you a lot about sort of the intensity that we were applying on them.
Yeah, it was close. It's about 8 minutes after we bring on Mo and Robbo that De Bruyne goes off, and Dave, Harry brings it up, and it felt like quite a moment in terms of you mentioned how De Bruyne hasn't been quite back to his magical best, but he has also been, at his magical best in certain moments in games. He's not like perhaps his full force, but he's an outrageous talent, and to see him go off and to see that Burnley over and back, that was very, very interesting. And we'll get to it. Let's have a look at the next little chunk, you and I, after we bring in the subs. Just to reiterate, it is Mo Salah and Robbo who come on for Conor Bradley and Dom Szoboszlai. The timing is remarkable, because it's just immediately after Dom's terrible effort, he gets hooked. And listen, this guy is making his way back, and we need to remember what an impact he had at the start of our season, when if it hadn't been for him, we would not be where we are now. And if he ever gets back in this campaign to that type of form, we are in for a treat. On 62 minutes, Mo plays the most magnificent through ball, 2 minutes after he's on the field, to Diaz. And this is the one that really kind of kills us, because LD is through. He's bearing down a goal. The ball into him is like, it's just the perfection. Just vision incarnate from Mo. Slid through right down the middle. Luis Diaz takes his touch. It's perfect. He sets himself. He opens up the inside of his foot. He's looking to kind of push it into the top corner, or just inside the post to the keeper's left, the right as he's facing it. And he contrives to put it wide. Now, I'm going to pause there, because I do want to hear what you think about Diaz overall, because we might get a chance to come back to it with you here. This is probably the moment of all the moments. He had some great chances, but this is the one where it's like he's right through a goal. He does have the keeper beaten. All he's got to do is keep it on target. He doesn't manage to do it. But the lad is actually outrageously good all the way through the game, right to the death in terms of carrying the fight. Yeah. So I get the point Harry makes. Sadio is scoring at least two or three today. LD's not Sadio, but he's still brilliant and he is still causing carnage.
Yeah, I mean, we say that. It's not like Sadio didn't miss a whole bunch of big chances in his time at the club either. And I don't think Sadio takes the fight to them. Like, certainly not late Sadio, like the last 12 months or so of Sadio. Like, Diaz was really good today outside the penalty box. And then in the penalty box, he was an absolute mess. He gets through there from that incredible ball by Salah. And the keeper sells himself really early. But he also sells himself at a kind of a funny angle. Like, he comes out and he's almost... because of the angle where Diaz comes through, the goalkeeper's not right in front of Diaz as he spreads himself. And I think if he just either goes to the left-hand post and clips it over the keeper's outstretched leg, or if he just fences to shoot, the keeper's down and runs the ball round him, he's got a simple tap-in on his left foot, because Kyle Walker makes a decision to go the other side of the goalkeeper, having not been able to catch up with Diaz.
Yeah,
I do think if Diaz just takes one more touch to bring the ball onto his left foot, he's tapping into a pretty empty net, unless Walker gets a rocket up his arse and gets back on the line. Like, it's just, it's a little bit of a lack of composure. And that was the problem with Diaz today. Like, everything else he did was phenomenally good. He ran Walker ragged. He ran Rodri a few times. He ran away from Phil Foden multiple times. And he did bring the fight down that left side. And I felt like every time he actually decided to go at Kyle Walker, he got the better of him. And Walker's a really good 1v1 defender because he's got that incredible pace. Yeah. But Diaz, because he's so shifty, was able to kind of drop a shoulder and send Walker away and get a little bit of space multiple times. It was just that lack of composure in front of goal. We saw it in that one in the first half that you mentioned, where he works the space for himself really well. And just take a look. Like, go far post. Take a look at what you're shooting at. But he hooks it near post and doesn't really get it. It's about a yard wide, ultimately. And then these multiple chances in the second half, again, it just comes down to a lack of composure. Like, it really does. If he just takes one more touch, he's round the goalkeeper, who's spread-eagled on the floor, and he's rolling it into an empty net. And ultimately, that's, you know, it's cost us today. But at the same time, I don't know that we're in the position to say, well, Luis Diaz cost us today, if Luis Diaz isn't playing as well as he is in other areas.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because it is that idea that I was trying to articulate of carrying the fight. And yeah, Sadio Mane did that, and Sadio Mane possibly, I'm rose-tinted glasses-ing the whole thing, because yeah, he did miss a sight of them, but he also scored a sight of them too, and quite often go-ahead goals or absolutely critical goals. Yeah, towards the tail end, the form wasn't what it had been in the past, and it's not fair to make those direct comparisons because they're very different fellas.
He's not going to be Sadio. Sadio was, like, think back to the year we won the league. Sadio was the best footballer in the Premier League that year. He was 100%. I think he finished number two in the Ballon d'Or. Sadio was incredible. Luis Diaz is a very different player, and he plays in a very different Liverpool team as well. We don't play the way we used to.
No,
I don't know that Sadio would have been as effective with Darwin as a nine rather than Bobby as the nine. Do you know what I mean? So
No, it's a really good point, and obviously we have to evolve, and we have Luis Diaz there, and like, after the chance we've just mentioned, an unreal opportunity, within 1 minute he has another one. He's in again. It's a Darwin ball. It's a really, by the way, little bit of kudos to this kid. People think, you know, Darwin, you know, he's a mad lad. He's unhinged. He's a chaos merchant. He's a bit of a lunatic, and everything's seat of the pants. You know, bollocks. His technique is actually outrageous. The pass where he plays in Luis Diaz a minute after that chance we were talking about is just brilliant vision. He has actually made this team so much better, and he is so much better than he's given credit for. I want to mention it there. You can bring it in back in a second day if you want. But let's you and I take a look at the next little section of the match, because it's kind of all us. There is a chance that breaks to Mo Salah. His first time effort is blocked. And then he's a follow-up, and I'm thinking, oh, please bulge the net here. It's a half volley. He hits it with his left foot or right foot, and it's just wide of the post. Then there's another chance soon after that. McAllister has a hit that's touched around the post that leads to a corner. We get nothing from it. On 68, Robbo's cross. It's a badly hit one, but it nearly drops into the top corner. A bit of a moment of worry. On 68, then they bring in Kovacic and Doku for De Bruyne and Alvarez. It has a positive impact for them, but not just as positive as you might think it's going to have. Both of them are involved in different ways. I think Kovacic came in and brought City's possession play back, because I think if it hadn't been for his introduction, then City wouldn't have had the possession that they had in the remaining part of the game. And I think Doku's involvement was more sharp end, exactly what you'd think. But again, you can tell me what you think about that. But immediately after their introduction, Darwin has an opportunity. He's literally... was he a couple of yards out? It's a point blank save by their keeper Ortega after a fantastic ball in by Robbo. Like, I'm not sure Darwin can do a whole lot more, to be honest. Then at 2 minutes after that, Quivin punches one against Foden's arm and it hits the bar. I think it would have been disallowed, but then again, PGMOL, who fucking knows? On 75 minutes, we take off Darwin Nunez. And Cody Gakpo comes on. And I'm just going to do one or two more things here and leave it at that. And then me and Harry will finish the match. Because after that substitution, there was a tame Doku effort at Quivin Kelleher on about 78 minutes. They'd had a bit of possession for the first time in ages. On 79, Kwanzaa then strode forward. His effort was pushed away at full stretch by the keeper. And I'm going to pause it there, because at this point I'm thinking, you know, how are things working out well for them? A keeper who's, you know, a sub keeper coming on. It's a totally specialist position. The lad comes in, he does really well, Dave. Like, it's kind of adding to the feeling of frustration, I think, for the afternoon. What do you think of that chunk of the match? Anything you want to pick out of it? Because there was a lot going on there.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no-obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Darwin reverse ball to Diaz is unbelievable. He should score. It's a lack of composure. His first touch is dreadful. Then there's, like you said, that Darwin chance. Like you, I don't think he can do much more. I think you're just trying to redirect the power off the Robertson cross and get it on target. But the keeper's done really well because he's come off his line. And, you know, fair play to him. And yeah, he did pretty well. I don't think we did enough to really challenge him, is what I would say. I don't think we really did enough to challenge him. As dominant as we were in that second half, we created, I mean, the big chance for Diaz. The chance for Darwin, I would say, is a good chance, not a big chance. the Diaz one where the reverse ball, the first touch, like he doesn't get the shot away. I don't think we did enough to really challenge him, you know?
Yeah,
I feel like there was, that's where we've left meat on the bone there today, is we just haven't been clinical enough in front of goal. And look, you're going to have days like that, but everything else, like, you can't find fault. There was one or two loose moments by Kwanzaa. That was about the height of it for him. Other than that, he was incredible. Bradley, the same. He had one or two, you know, loose clearances. But other than that, I mean, every one of those lads today, I'm just in awe watching Endo and Alexis in midfield together. Two lads going up against the much vaunted Rodri, who without question is an incredible footballer, is the best in the world in his position. John Stones, who's one of the more overrated players in the world. Jamie Carragher flailing away at his own cock every time. it's a remark. I've never seen a centre-back do what John Stones does. What are you talking about? We barely got a kick at the ball today other than the goal. We just dominated him in midfield today. Like, you know, those two boys. Look, I know what you guys were saying about Dom. He's clearly not back to full power. He still put in a hell of a shift. Like, he still ran the legs off himself. He still closed them and harried them and harassed them and won ball back and got us going the right direction. He played a couple of nice passes. He was involved in some of our better moves. And then when Harvey went back into midfield as well, like, he just endless, I don't know, Harvey Elliott must just, he must have four lungs or something. That kid is just unreal.
With toddler energy.
He's still 15, like, and he's just endless amounts of energy to run and play and do all the right things. Like, we've let them off the hook a little bit today because we weren't clinical enough and because PGMOL are a sack of shite.
Yes, and I'm going to stop you there because otherwise you're going to get into too much summary, which is where I'm coming back to you for your final thoughts in a minute. Harry, let's you and I look at the last part of the game because there is more drama to discuss here. We mentioned Kwanzaa striding forward and having his efforts saved. And then there is a really good Luis Diaz attack. He does really well against both Rodri and Walker. And wins a corner. And from that corner, I don't know, I maybe I've become entitled, but I was half expecting Virgil would win it and score. But he heads slightly over the top from that Robbo corner. Joe Gomez has a shot blocked in 83 minutes, which is one of those things that's just going to be probably the most annoying narrative in the history of football until it happens. Again, 83 minutes. Mac this time with an effort over the top. Robbo knocks the ball down to him with a header. Walker makes a decent intervention. I think I didn't see enough replays to have an opinion one way or the other. Diaz, really impressively full of running and giving the truth to that opinion of Dave's, that the stuff he was doing in and around and outside the box was absolutely outrageous. The energy, the strength, the determination, the relentlessness is quite cool. At this point, and I don't want to feed into any sort of, Harry, I was going to make a qualifying statement. I couldn't give a shit. I've written down here, do more, Cody, for fuck's sake, because I need to see this guy really, really like lean into all his talents and all his abilities. And I just saw him get monstered on a couple of occasions for no reason. He's a bigger guy than the guy who's challenging him. And when you look at what Harvey Elliott was doing right till the death, you look at what Luis Diaz was doing, much smaller fellas, much less body weight and strength. And it just feels really, it's frustrating. 88, they shifted it left. Doku shot across the face of goal. We get off. It comes off the post and pops back into Queeveen's grateful paws. We're very, very happy with that.
Did he save that? Did he get a finger to that?
I didn't see any contact from him because I saw literally one replay, Dave. But 89 minutes, Mo's cross to Cody Gakpo. Really poor. He should do so much better. 8 minutes were added. And at that point, what was interesting, Harry, was that I thought I love the reaction from Anfield. Anfield were going, fucking 8 minutes, great. The cheer was great. We like Anfield was loving it. It was like, right, let's beat these fucks. We got a corner from a Harvey cross on 91. Nothing accrued from that. Virgil van Dijk puts in a great foot in on 92 minutes to stop a counter-attack. Another masterful performance from that lad. We had the ball in net 93 from Harvey Elliott, but Mo was offside in the build-up, and he was offside needlessly in the build-up, if we're being perfectly honest. There was no need for him to run as early as he did. Dangerous ball in by Doku on 94. On 96, there's an opportunity where Cody basically sets up Mo Salah when the shot was on for Gakpo. Mo went down under the strength of the challenge. There was a VAR look at it. Nothing was given because I think that seemed to be a reasonably correct decision. You can tell me if you think I was wrong. I loved Joe Gomez versus Haaland on 96 or 97 minutes. Because I love anyone against Haaland, because he just has that Highlander Kurgan vibe about him. So anyone who's standing up to him, especially if it's Joe, I'm all there for it. Harvey wins a corner in 97. And then we have the moment at the end, right at the death, which not only you, but Dave, and I think Guy before the mics went live, and at least three people on my Twitter timeline have all made the same point. If this happens on the 73rd or 78th or even the 83rd or 88th minute, it is a penalty because Doku goes straight in. I'm looking at it right here in front of me as we speak. And the challenge, in inverted commas, is outrageous. It's in the box. It's a high foot. It's straight into the chest. It's not a natural coming together. You can't escape it. You can't get around it. It's in no way anything but foul play and dangerous play. It is a fucking penalty. End of story. All day, every day. Please, Man City fans and podcasts, clip that. Play it. Drive yourselves mental. Pull the bellies out of yourself replaying me to you because it's a penalty. That's all it is. There is no way around this. You can't make any other argument. I really, really hope that you agree with me on that. But if you don't, I'd be very curious as to why. We get a last minute corner and alas, nothing accrues from it. But even Mike Dean, Harry, even Mike Dean, who is clearly the worst shill corporate whore in the world, available for the highest bidder, who will say the thing that he is told to say, even he agreed that was a penalty. Talk to me about the end of the game before I go back to Dave for his wrap-ups, and then we'll finish with yours.
Yeah, I thought there were obviously a couple of close calls there. I mean, there's the Foden chance that ricochets off the bar, of course, and then there's the Doku chance as well. I mean, again, I think it's probably the one moment I can remember where Doku was left 1v1 with us, like, into the sort of putting a defender in a dangerous situation. He's a difficult customer to deal with, but yeah, thankfully wasn't able to convert that. And the Doku incident, I think, is the one that will probably consume the most emotion, time from all of us. And I think the main thing that I thought was similar to what you're saying there, Trevor, that anywhere else on the pitch, I think that is given as a foul. It is a foul. Jürgen in the post-match interview has been pretty unequivocal about it as well. And that any football people on the planet would understand that is a penalty. Tried to ask the reporter to answer to him as well about his opinion on it. And that's when he sort of asked, yeah, but he's sure that Mike Dean, by the way, have you hired Mike Dean? And they confirmed that Sky Sports had hired Mike Dean. Great appointment, by the way, as you said, good process. I'm sure Mike will find a way to articulate why it's not a penalty. But actually what Mike Dean did was his usual, what we've come to expect now, actually, since we've seen him there, which is agree with the logical decision, which was, oh, that's a penalty. Or I think in the Carabao Cup final, right? Yeah, agree with the obvious correct decision, probably. And then when the referees come back and don't give that decision, he then changes his tune and goes, oh, no, yeah, I can see why that's not a penalty. It's useless. It's a useless addition to analysis, let alone it being wrong. If somebody is going to have an opinion, having been a qualified referee for many, many years, and then change that opinion to just like basically follow whatever the on-field refs are saying. It's not a very useful addition, even when you're thinking about the product that you're trying to sell in terms of the Sky Sports football product. So again, very frustrating. I think it's you can't help but think about the other decisions we've had this season in terms of the red cards that we've mentioned. Yeah, where we've been hard done by. The Ødegaard handball at Anfield again, which really comes to my mind as well. It's a penalty, and then yeah, we should be tucking that one away and coming away from the game with 3 points, in my opinion. And I think as I said right at the start of the pod, not making a decision is the easiest thing they could have done. And I think it's just a lack of responsibility from the referee to not make a decision in that, or for the VAR to not tell him to go across and have a look at that. I just find it remarkable, really. See plenty of people comparing it to the De Jong kick in the to Xabi Alonso, who may or may not be on his way in a few months. In terms of how egregious it was, perhaps that was, I think, a bit more egregious, but still remarkable that no decision is made. I think in a game of these stakes, where the margins are so thin, I think it's just it's a lack of responsibility. But I think in this section as well, you saw McAllister really get further forward, and that's why he's in the position to be involved in these incidents. And yeah, he's just so neat and tidy around the box, and so useful with making these sorts of runs. You just want to see him in those positions as often as possible. So yeah, I thought it was frustrating, of course, frustrating into the game, but many, many performances to be proud of.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing your wrap ups in a minute. I really do appreciate that take. I find myself nodding along there in concurring with how you're analysing that section. Get us your wrap ups ready for a second, and any stuff that you have for the week coming up, and we'll be back to you to finish the show, Harry. And Dave, let's get your wrap-up thoughts now. I've no doubt you're going to want to wrap in some sort of chat about that penalty, whether or not you think it was as obvious as I did. Maybe a word for, opinion for hiring Mike Dean. And just your overall take on where you think we are now in terms of what this has done. Like, I'm very aware, because like, as you are very, very aware of, I don't listen to a whole lot of stuff. I listen to some selected stuff from our own channel. I listen to you and Carl, listen to Harry, and I listen to your Daily Red. And I'm aware of the fact that you've always been saying from minute one that it's City's title to lose.
Mm.
But I'm wondering if today has changed that for you in any way, shape, or form, due to the intent, due to the humbling that they had to endure for long periods of that second half. So factor that in, if you wouldn't mind, into your summary, and let us know what's coming from you in the week.
Well, the first place I'd like to start is I hope that Kevin De Bruyne this evening is has his parents there to comfort him after he was bullied by a Japanese man with a gum shield for 65 minutes, which can't be a pleasant experience. But rest assured, most of the midfielders in the league have had exactly the same experience when they go up against Arendo. Mike Dean, Jesus wept. Mike Dean, I think he'll send them to the screen. That's a penalty. VAR, check complete, no penalty. Mike Dean, yeah, no penalty. You just you can't put a price on that level of quality, qualified input, yeah, insight.
Yeah.
It's worth obviously remembering and reminding people that Mike Dean, when he was a referee, was shit. So expecting good opinions from him in this new role that he has is just a waste of time, because he was a shit referee. He was a completely shit referee. What we've witnessed today is we've witnessed a referee bottle a big decision. That is a stonewall penalty. I don't care if Doku kicks the ball first. It's dangerous play. I don't care if he makes the slightest contact. It's dangerous play in the penalty area. It's a stonewall penalty. And as I said to you earlier, and you've said it, Trev, a bunch of other people have said it too, if it happens at any stage earlier in the game, it's given. Without question, it's given. But, and here's the but, what has Guardiola spent his week talking about?
Yep.
About how every time they come to Anfield, there's a big decision that goes against them. Which, yep, by the way, is complete and utter horseshit. But he spent his week building pressure on the PGMOL. And there was no way they were going to hand us a win. The other factor here is, because of the nonsense that surrounded our winner last week, there was absolutely guaranteed to be a feeling that if we give them two in a row, despite the fact that the drop ball did not contribute to us winning the game last week, the goal came 2 minutes later, they had possession multiple times, and the ball was out of play twice, I think. But there was absolutely no way he was going to give a penalty there. Now, if Oliver gives a penalty, there's not a hope in hell that it's overturned. It's immediately confirmed. But Oliver bottles it, and the PGMOL VAR idiot doesn't want to be the one, because Guardiola has been stoking the flames, because there was all that chatter about what happened last weekend. They did not want to give us that penalty in that scenario, knowing that the final whistle is seconds away. I do also want to take a little bit of umbrage with the fact that we're only 8 minutes added, because when Ederson fouls Darwin, that's, I think, 65 seconds into the second half. And Alexis doesn't take the penalty for like 4.5 minutes after that.
Yeah.
And then he goes down again, and he's down, and the whole process of him being treated and going off is at least 4 minutes. So there's 8.5 minutes immediately that should have been added on. Kyle Walker also received treatment for about a minute. I was going to say
Walker, yeah.
That was about a 2 minute stoppage, maybe a little bit longer. There were also multiple substitutions made in the half that stopped the game. So I don't really understand how it was only 8 minutes when it should have been 10, possibly even 12. But we were on top, so how would you expect anything else? My hope today was that we would have flown at them out of the blocks, and we didn't quite do that. But when we got going today, we were absolutely outstanding. And the thing is, if we don't win the league this year, it will have nothing to do with these players. It will have nothing to do with this manager. It'll be down to two things. It'll be down to injuries, and it'll be down to horrendous refereeing. Because, yes, we currently sit second because of goal difference. The reason for that is that we've had 5 points robbed off us this season. Two today, two at home to Arsenal when Odegaard played basketball, and one away to Spurs. And a lot of people will say three away to Spurs, but we were already down to 10 men. So I'll just say one away to Spurs. That's 5 points. And bear in mind, both Arsenal and City, as a result of those robberies, have a point more than they should have. So we should actually be 6 points clear of Manchester City right now, and of Arsenal right now, and 8 points clear of Manchester City. We're yet to play either of them with anything resembling our best 11, and yet we're still here. We're not going away. And we've proven multiple times that we're capable of putting together strong runs through the last 10 games. Now, so have City, but Arsenal have not. What they've proven in the last two seasons is that when the real pressure lands with the last 10 games, is that they choke. And they have the hardest run in. Now, City's is probably a little bit easier than ours, but they do have to play Arsenal next. And they have to go to Spurs, which they have not done well with in the last couple of years. Yeah. So we're in a really good position here. A really, really good position where we continue to overcome all the odds.
We want Arsenal, don't we, to keep thinking they can win it. And
a draw there is the best result for us.
Well, a draw is probably best, but if they beat City and like really get their tails up and think that they can do it, they're not going to do it, by the way. And so it doesn't really matter. A draw or an Arsenal win is optimal.
Yeah, because if you look at City's remaining games, they've got Chelsea at home. Now, Chelsea are not good, but Chelsea have played well against Arsenal this year and against City twice. They do well against that style of team. They've got City away, which is really hard. Luton home is a fairly straightforward one. They've got to go to Brighton, which will be really tough. They've got Villa home. Villa could still be battling for fourth at the time. Wolves away, that's tough. Then Spurs away, that's tough. Bournemouth home is straightforward. They do have to go to Old Trafford. And I know United are not good, but they played them really hard earlier this season. And if United have a bunch of players back, that could be very tricky. And then they've got Everton final day. And Everton are garbage, but may well need something to stay up that day. So we've seen Sean Dyche's taking over get results against Arsenal. So I think they've got by far the hardest run in. City have Brighton away, which is tough. They've got Arsenal home, Villa home, but McGinn will miss that because he was sent off today. Crystal Palace away, should win. Luton home, should win. Spurs away, really tough. Their last four are straightforward. They go to Forest, they play Wolves home, and Wolves away aren't as good as Wolves are at Molineux. They go to Fulham, they go to West. I'd say they play West Ham at home. So they'll be very, very confident about their last four. Our run-in is, you could argue it's the easiest of the three. We've got Everton away. Again, they're shit, but it's the derby. We've got Brighton home. We should win that. We've got Sheffield United home, and that's massive. Our next two league games are both at home, and they're both games we should win. Then we go to Old Trafford, and that's the weekend of my birthday. And I'm telling you now, there's no way Jurgen's letting me down. So we're winning that. We've got Palace home, which we should win comfortably. We've got Fulham away, which is tricky enough, but we've been there and won. You know, we've been there this season, and we've gotten a result. I think we can go there and win. We'll have, hopefully by then, everybody back, including Diogo Jota, which is going to be massive, remember. We might get him back for the last five or six games, depending on when the Everton game is slotted in.
Huge.
We go to West Ham. Now, they've just struggled to get a draw at home to Burnley this year. If they get through in this round of the Europa League, they lost first leg 1-0. Their eyes might be on that Europa League if they're still going in it, and they might just give up on the league. But either way, we should still be able to go there and win. We get Spurs home, which is big. The other two have to go to Spurs. We get them at home, and Spurs haven't been great away from home this year. Villa away is the one that does really concern me because they've been good at home, but they got hammered today by Spurs, and they're missing some players. Boubacar Kamara not being there has been massive, and in all likelihood, they will be going deep into the Europa Conference League, and maybe that's where their focus will go. If Spurs can overhaul them in the next couple of weeks and make it so that Villa don't have top four to play for, we might get a very, very scant Villa team with a bunch of players been rested for Europe. And then we get Wolves home. And if we go into the Wolves game in a situation where if we win the title, there is not a fucking thing in the world that's stopping us winning that game. Nothing is stopping us winning that game. I still think, I'm going to say it, whether it's to calm my own expectations or what, I don't know. I'm still going to say it's City's title to lose.
Because
it puts the pressure on them and not on us.
Yeah, I like it.
They've won it. Look, they have won it three times in a row. You have to give the players the credit for it. But 115 charges is 115 charges, and nobody wants to see the cunts win the league. So up the Reds.
Yeah, the players that's the point. The players, the manager, whatever you think about them, it's got nothing to do with that. They are just a wonderful unit who are doing wonderful things. It's all to do with how that was put together. That's all.
I mean, the only reason the players are there is because of the cheating. But the players themselves, they might be complicit in the cheating because they do likely understand that other clubs are not paying players to be the CEO of companies that don't actually exist and such under the table. But the players are still getting out on the pitch and winning the games. That's the be-all and the end-all of it. But we're a point ahead of them. And I just remain convinced that if we finish ahead of them, we will win the league.
Dave will be doing the Daily Red most days this week. You'll be doing Two Footed most days this week. You'll have at least one of the Scouted's Worth Young Matchet ahead of the next game. Have I left anything out, buddy?
No, I might need a day off this week because I've got a fairly nasty case of vertigo and I might just need a day to go to the doctor. So we'll see. But yeah, there'll be Two Footed Daily Red and a couple of Scouted's, and I'm sure we'll probably try and squeeze a buzz in at some point as well.
We shall. I too am suffering and I have not surfaced until today, really, in terms of having anything about me at all. Big shout out just to an Anfield Index listener who is a top, top man. I'll speak more about him and on, but it's nice when you get a chance to come across and meet people in real life who are absolutely top fellas, and makes you remember why it is you're in this in the first place. It's about the people. It's always about the people. So quick shout out to Donald, absolute legend of a man. Before we finish up with Harry, Mike Carney on Twitter, I want to read this out. Wataru Endo would slide tackle your Lan and then help her up and shake her hand. I fucking love Mike. That's a great shout. Harry, take us home, man. What's your wrap-up thoughts? And do let us know what's coming up for you in the week.
Yeah, it's probably worth talking a little bit about Endo. I think he's just grown and grown and grown over the weeks in terms of his influence. I think in terms of his cult following. I think I'm reminded back to people that I spoke to when he first signed, and let's face it, we were all somewhat doubtful as to sort of how heavily he could contribute. And lots of those who watch the Bundesliga on a regular basis, perhaps there were concerns about maybe his physical drop off and what had happened to him, but they talked at length about the fight that he showed on a regular basis, the way in which he was loved by his teammates, and the fact that he's actually a lot more handy technically and going forward and being a positive player than you perhaps would think. And he just proves it week after week after week. I think the understanding that he's developed with McAllister as well has been really, really powerful for us. I think in terms of his stats today, it's very impressive. Like, I think he won 6 out of 7 of his duels and like 96% of his passes throughout the entirety of the game. There's a couple of interceptions in there, a couple of clearances. And as Dave said, he's going up against players that are lauded in terms of being some of the best in their positions in the world. And he's coming off the pitch, taking out the gum shield, getting high fives from everybody, pats on the head. There's going to be a blog about it soon, Trev, because he's keeping account of all this. So thought he was excellent. I think we could go player by player, to be honest. But again, sort of no word there for Virgil and Kelleher, who we've not really mentioned too much. I think just again, huge performances, and as Dave mentioned with Virgil, just different levels to some of those who regularly get mentioned in the same breath. I think he's probably as confused as to sort of why he's involved in those lists as everybody else is, because he's on a different list and it's a very short one. And the game, I think as we've gone through it here on the pod, actually, as it often does, I'm left with a bit more pride about it than the frustration that we started the pod with. And I think it's very hard to criticize this team considering what they've been up against in terms of the competition and why that competition exists in its form, and the players that we've been without. I just think and even the news, let's say even the news about Jürgen's departure, it could have landed many different ways. We all thought it would galvanize and it has, but I think it's been really remarkable to see the team pull together across all these competitions and find a way to support each other. I think there's just one last thing on Harvey Elliott that I think Sam Maguire actually had mentioned, is in terms of that battery that you were talking about, Trev. He played 90 minutes against Luton, Sparta Prague and Man City, 120 minutes in the Carabao Cup final and 76 minutes against Southampton and Nottingham Forest, all across an 18-day period. So, I mean, we've spoken about perhaps some of our feelings about him and sort of whether or not he'd make it as a Liverpool player, especially in the positions that he's trying to make it in. But he's finding a way to contribute, and I would never have imagined that he'd be able to put in this level of shit.
And he's doing it in multiple positions as well. Imagine the inhalers we have him on. Four lungs. Like, it must be, he must be on three or four different inhalers if we're to believe the twat that ran away from Ireland because he cheated on his wife and he's now living in Russia. But I didn't say that.
I think he's clearly on the good stuff. It's on Mike's special stuff for all those Space Jam fans anyway. But yeah, lots of pride, Trev, coming out of that. And for me, I'll be across a couple of different roles during this period as the Reds, decide to compete in different competitions. Yeah, much to our chagrin at times and amusement in others. And also there'll be a rival recon. I think it's a bit of a break now, is it, with the internationals for the game against Brighton, which will be an interesting one at the end of the month. But yeah, catch me across a couple of roles in between that time as well.
You absolutely will, and you absolute legend. Your talk has brought us into the 100th minute of this particular podcast. We love to talk, the three of us. We have done it again, but it warrants it. It's one of these landmark matches in the season. We look back at it with particular joy and pride if it ends up being a season where the big one is won. The big one, let no one doubt, is of course this Premier League. It's what we still are in the shout for. It's what I believe is very possible for this group of players. As Dave says, there's lads coming back. As Harry says, we've got lads like Endo and Mac doing remarkable stuff as we speak, and bringing us to this position, which we have no real right to be in if you think about the fact that this is supposed to be a 2.0, which I know is grating on Guy there. Sorry, buddy. It's a remodel. It's lovely to see us in this position as we speak, and I hope we get to celebrate with Kloppo on the way out with multiple trophies, because I believe that's what this crew is worth and deserves, no less than the Raw crew. So thanks to Harry Sethi, and thanks to Dave Hendrick, and thanks to Guy Drinkle for producing. I've been Trev Downey. We've done 100 minutes. Sorry. See you soon.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index, and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.